Damon? Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 16th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. If anyone is here for Senate Bill 1501, we will not be taking that up today. We will carry it over to our next hearing, and we will be hearing everything else, but not necessarily in the order that the agenda says. So we have a couple of colleagues on two different bills. And Senator Javelin, are you okay waiting for us to just take some testimony and then we'll get right to you? Okay, so I will begin by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1569. And Erin, would you tell us about this bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1569 establishes the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee. It outlines the committee membership, including Senate President and Speaker of the House, and allows appointments of alternates, directs that committee members be appointed within 30 days after date of convening of odd-numbered session, directs committee to employ legislative policy and research director and fixed director salary, outline director's responsibilities, including prepare or assist in preparing legislative research, and facilitate development of policy when requested to do so by member or legislative committee, provide advice and assistance to committees, supervise supportive clerical and administrative services to session and interim committees, including ensuring adequacy of staff, provide research facilities and services to members and committees, permits director to employ professional staff and other employees, establishes that expiration of members' terms of the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee does not affect employment of individuals previously approved by committee, allows director to employ and fix compensation of staff between start of odd-numbered year and until such time when they are newly appointed committee may provide otherwise, establishes that president and speaker may jointly appoint new director if vacancy occurs, transfer some duties of Legislative Administration Committee to the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee, requires the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee or director to adhere to laws applicable to other legislative branch agencies, including public records and statement of economic interest, transfers Financial Estimate Committee and Explanatory Statement Committee responsibilities from Legislative Administration to the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee, transfers current committee and task force staffing from Legislative Administration to the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee. There's an emergency clause on the measure. You have a dash one amendment, which makes specific sections of the bill operative July 1, 2017. You have a dash three amendment, which specifies composition of the Joint Legislative Policy and Research Committee to be equal number of majority and minority party members, including Speaker and President, establishes that committee is appointed by Speaker and President, and that a new committee is appointed within 30 days after each odd-numbered year session is convened. We have fiscal statements on both the dash one and the dash three amendment, as this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Erin, for that explanation. It looks like we have two of our colleagues here, and whichever one of you wants to go first, I think.
Want me to lead?
Senator Boquist.
Okay. For the record, I am Senator Brian Boquist, District 12. I was one of the four senators that was on the third, I believe, iteration of a work group that was made up of equal representatives, equal senators, equal majority, and equal minority to try and determine the future way forward for a independent policy research function here in the legislature. As I said, that was the third iteration that actually started out of this. I was in the first iteration, which was once again not the same wide composition, but I think it started in the Senate. It was equal and equal. And then there was another work group that was equal and equal from the House and the Senate. And then I guess because we needed adult leadership, they brought in consultants and had us all go through the same thing again. That report, colleagues, Madam Chair and members of the public, is in fact, I believe, Council up on OLIS now, so that everybody can see what that is. This is actually an extension of what came out of the constitutional amendment, which created the short session in saying that, okay, if we're going to be here, we, the legislature, as a nonpartisan entity, have to be able to outfox the executive branch because we don't want to be hoodwinked, and there are specific areas in which I don't suppose I'll raise not right now, but that we're raised in saying in these specialty areas, we need to be able to go in and have extensive research done so that we can come back and tell our colleagues in the executive branch, no, that's not what's happening. This is the sort of thing that we need to do. And it would come back in such a manner that it would be completely nonpartisan. One of the elements of doing that in the last set of consulting work was trying to identify that structure. And I think it, though it was completely unanimous that we needed to be completely bipartisan, it was kind of a tiered order of how do you do this and how do you do it most efficiently. What you see before you in Senate Bill 1569 with the amendments is basically the majority of the equality of the equal of a minority and the majority in saying that, okay, we probably economically need to sort of merge this into committee services and figure out what to do next in terms of going forward. What I do want to address, though, is the next step and the importance of the Dash 1 and the Dash 3 amendments in this is to formalize the fact that we're going to go forward, because there is budgetary considerations and there are funds that actually are available for additional staff positions that are out there that were put into this particular budget that we have right now. And by you take the 1 and the 3 and put it into the bill, we have a starting point for which the equal and equal, what I call the equal House, equal Senate, equal minority, equal majority, can then start down the road of trying to hatch out the rest of the items there. What, in quick summary, in closing, this does is creates the committee services, in a simple term, despite the language in here, committee services and the research entity as an equal footing to LFO, LRO, and outside of LAC, and it leaves LAC into the Legislative Administrative Committee into the administrative business. That's the basic intent. I hate to say this, but with this has been 6 years. I did all three two-year iterations of this study. It all came to the exact same conclusions, and that's sort of where we are right now today. There is 90% of the work still to be done, even if this bill passes, but that can be done by the equal and equal and the House and the Senate. And with that, I'll turn it out to my good colleague who I think only got to participate in 2 years of the 6 years of this.
Great. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you to my colleague at the table. After hearing the description, I've been wondering, does that mean what we have in front of us is a quadrilaterally equal approach? And I'm trying to think of a clever, well, quad equal, or we'll get there. I want to start first with emphasizing just a few very short phrases that were in the last year's report on options and costs to underscore what you've just heard. One of the things printed on page 3 of 40, this is in the executive summary, the legislative work group agreed that, quote, protecting the independence of the staff to produce nonpartisan research reports was critical to long-term credibility. That's a key factor. Another one is, and this is equally important to cost as well as method of implementation, on page 4, the work group pointed out the practicality of ramping up slowly. Let's see how it goes and build on success. Once we achieve something that seems a little bit workable or very workable, then we can say, well, that's working okay. What else can we do? Is it time to expand a little more? On page 5, it mentions the purpose, but I want to emphasize the product that was in the preferred elements of the work group's report was that the product be neutral policy analysis with options, not asking for recommendations. We want analysis, perhaps options, but it wasn't the point of the group to say, and this is the one solution that ought to be implemented. That was not what the work group came up with. That's not what the work group has in mind. I just want to add my voice of support to this effort that you see in front of you, the bill with the amendments. For me, the four things to add are, first, this is to increase the professional capacity that would be available to the legislature. We have some. We acknowledged there wasn't enough. So it increases the professional capacity. Two, by increasing the capacity, it will enable the staff to specialize in topic areas, similar to the way the legislative fiscal office and the legislative revenue office can specialize in the areas of taxation, the expenditures, and the revenue. The office might have specialists in areas that would be defined, such as transportation, natural resources, human services, and so forth. Another thing that I, for as one member of the group, would hope to see is that in addition to looking forward to possible new policy areas to work in, to follow up on implementation of bills that the legislature has already passed. I don't mean that this, I don't mean to imply that I think we should replace or duplicate work that's already being done very well, for example, by Legislative Fiscal Office or the Secretary of State's Audit Division. But there's plenty more that the legislature often says, I wonder how it's going, and that we ought to look into. Sometimes we hear about the difficulty that comes up in rulemaking. We pass a bill, it becomes part of the statute, and then in rulemaking we hear from constituents, is this what the legislature really intended? Sometimes the issue is one of consistency with legislative direction. Sometimes it's one of agency responsiveness about implementing a program that we've just put into place. And then the last point I want to make is incremental change. I think that instead of leaping into a costly new world of an independent policy commission or something like that, this is the right way to do it. This is a careful, incremental approach to increasing capacity in the legislative branch. So I hope you will agree that this is a good way to go. Thank you.
Thank you both. Any questions for our colleagues?
Okay, Madam Chair, if you may, I put a couple things into the record so that we go forward. Just to clarify, the Senate members were myself and Senator Witt sits in the Republican side, and Senator Johnson and Senator Dembro. And to this point, everybody agreed to everything that's been putting out, which is frankly pretty amazing in this building, by the way. But also for the record, Madam Chair, I think I need to point out the step into this, if this legislation were to be passed, is, of course, one, to become an independent branch similar to LFO, LRO. That's the first thing. There would then be a reclassification to a director position similar to Mr. Rocco or Mr. Warner in there, and then there is an additional staffing that was set out so that when we went into the 2017, that minimal amount of funding, those positions would be hired under the direction of the director and the new equal committee, and those positions then would become full-time after that point in the future to start fulfilling the obligations that were outlined by the good representatives. That's sort of the path forward and more to follow.
Okay. Well, thank you both for your testimony. And I don't have anybody else signed up to testify, so I think this is ready to move to Ways and Means once we adopt
ways
these amendments.
Means,
so I will close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate
cost.
Bill 1569. And Vice Chair Ferriola?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments.
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
Senator Ferriola has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1569. Is there any objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 1569.
And Senator Ferrioli has moved the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 1569. Any objection to his motion?
Discussion, Madam Chair?
Yes, discussion.
The Dash 1 amendment, for those that are not following on OLIS, is appropriation. It would account for the cost of the development of the Policy and Research Committee. It is going to Ways and Means, Madam Chair, because of the $1.7 million anticipated expenditure in the 17-19 biennium. The Dash 3 amendments is meant to conform the final product to the description that we heard by the proponents, which is a group of folks that is appointed to represent the majority party, the minority party, the speaker, both chambers. It's bicameral. It is absolutely scrupulously balanced, and the committee itself will be hiring the director, who serves at the pleasure, not of the appointing officers in a usual fashion, either the president or the speaker, but serves at the pleasure of the committee. So, Madam Chair, just as junk science is all the stuff brought by the opponents, and good science is all the stuff brought by the proponents, this offers us an opportunity to make good policy as a product of collaboration, and actually should produce objective analysis presented to the committee, which receives its information as a co-equal, balanced organ of this legislative assembly. So we think this is a really good idea to move forward in something that can't be dismissed as simply a partisan effort at manipulating policy.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Further discussion on the -3 amendment. We're not yet on the bill.
We can go to the bill. Okay. I just need to put on the record.
Any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Ferrioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1569 with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the measure be referred to the Ways and Means Committee prior by prior reference.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 1569 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be sent to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Boquist.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a clarification for the public so that they know. The present funding that was mentioned, the $1.7 million, is actually in the existing biennial budget. It just has to go down to Ways and Means to have it put in the right places now. So it's actually not a new expenditure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries, and this bill will go to Ways and Means. And next, we'll go to, I'll open a work, and for those who weren't here earlier, we won't be taking up Senate Bill 1501 today. So next, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1586 and call Senator Devlin to join us at the dais. And Erin, would you like to tell us what we're looking at?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1586 was originally heard on February 4th, and it directs public universities and community colleges to increase voter registration access and information and requires state to use business and apply envelopes for the postage of ballot return envelopes for each election held in Oregon, and applies to elections held after January 1, 2017. You have a -1 amendment, Madam Chair. It directs the Secretary of State to ensure that within 4 miles of public university and community college main campus, there's at least one designated official drop box. Clarifies where school is required to display direct link to Secretary of State's online voter registration tool on internet, website, or any other appropriate school-focused digital communication network managed by the school. Gives the school's official student government or its equivalent opportunity to provide nonpartisan voter registration services as part of the student orientation programs held by school's administration, campus welcome events that occur before classes begin each academic term, and resident life program activities. Clarifies that professional contact information for school faculty will be provided upon request of school's official student government or its equivalent. Requires students and student groups providing nonpartisan registration information in non-reserved public space on school property to conform to rules of conduct and rules for reserving space at school. You have a -2 amendment that removes the direction to public universities and community colleges to increase voter registration access. Requires voters to return their own ballot by mail or depositing it in a designated drop box location. Prohibits person from collecting or returning ballot for voter except if voter is immediate family member or ongoing caregiver for the voter. We do have a no revenue impact on the -1. We have a fiscal statement we just received before this hearing on the -1 amendment. This measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means as well, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And Senator Devlin, would you like to tell us about your amendment?
Okay. First of all, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19, I believe your extremely competent committee administrator did a very good job of describing both amendments that are before you. The particular amendment that I have before you makes a number of corrections that I would think are almost technical in nature, but they actually resolve a number of issues that the parties that have that we've worked with over the last several months we've tried to resolve. You will actually also have on OLIS a letter of support for the -1 amendments and the bill with the -1 amendments from all 7 of our universities. The community colleges have been consulted. They have not expressed any concerns. Some of the other amendment was basically a discussion between some of the parties in terms of the distance for a drop box, and it was settled on the distance of being within 4 miles versus 1 mile. And so that's basically what these amendments do. I would hope that the committee would forward this on to Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation. We will get a clearer fiscal at that time. The fiscal for the portion of this bill that has to do with the sort of improved access for nonpartisan registration will be quite small. The fiscal actually in this biennium on the postage business envelopes will be quite small. I anticipate the cost in the coming biennium 17-19 will be lower than people anticipate. Now, part of that will depend upon behavior. Even if we do have an increase in terms of registration, even if we do have an increase in turnout, when we've looked at our even-numbered year elections, both presidential and non-presidential years, we usually have roughly about 1.8 million voters. Literally, we have consistent history on those over the last four bienniums, that about 40% of those ballots are returned by mail. So there may be some discussion about if that behavior will change, but roughly 40% are returned by mail. A very high proportion are dropped in drop boxes, and a relatively small portion comes to elections offices in different ways.
Okay, and Senator Devlin, you're speaking on the Dash 1
yes.
amendment, correct? Okay. Did we have any questions for Senator Devlin? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so thank you very much. And we are in a work session. Senator Farioli, I don't know if you're prepared to move the Dash 1 amendment.
No, ma'am.
Okay. Senator Beyer, would you like to move the Dash 1 amendment?
Certainly, Madam Chair. I would move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1586.
Okay, Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1586. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Okay, Eamon, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Brady?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. And motion carries. And Senator Beyer, the motion would be to send this to Ways and Means as amended.
I can move the other one.
Or Senator Farioli, did you want to make that motion?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1586 as amended by the Dash 1s to Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 1586 as amended by the Dash 1 to the floor with a DuPass recommendation and to be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there a discussion on the motion? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, the appropriate drop box for a ballot voted in Oregon is the U.S. postal receptacles that are virtually everywhere. We know that apparently millennials are not familiar with postage stamps. That's another deficiency of the Oregon education system. However, there's a button on the ATM machine that offers postage stamps at virtually every transaction, so they're not beyond the reach of most citizens. I would just suggest that this really does, in my estimation, not represent a poll tax, as we had testified to in the hearing on the bill. The cost of a postage stamp is a very small burden to bear, given the magnitude of the responsibility being carried out by the voter in exercising franchise. So, Madam Chair, I will be voting no, and I will serve notice of the intent to file a minority report.
You can do that, Senator Farioli, but this bill is going to Ways and Means.
Yes, ma'am, for the purpose, I believe, of having the minority report stripped. Nonetheless, Madam Chair, we will file the minority report.
I think it's going to Ways and Means because it's got a fairly hefty fiscal attached.
Another reason to vote no. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was
could make one comment for the record, but I'll make one comment before that. I believe that the good senator that just testified before us said that there would not be a hefty fiscal, that it would be very, very small in this binding. Mm-hmm. I think that's the correct thing, and a check of OLAS would do that. But actually, what I wanted to point out is not arguing about the bill. I did reach out after the last discussion with a series of questions, and I could thank the good Senator Devlin for getting some information back from the universities. And unfortunately, when I did reach out to the universities and community colleges to get some questions answered, I do know the message went out, and I got no reply. So, therefore, I too will be a no. Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, do you need two of our members to serve notice of a minority yes. report?
So, for the record, when it gets to that point, I am serving notice.
Again, I would just clarify that the bill is going to Ways and Means, so I assume my colleagues are serving notice in case that gets rescinded and it goes directly to the floor.
Now, Madam, you may assume away. I do not wish to challenge your assumption.
But it is a correct assumption, Madam.
Okay, so yes, Senator Beyer.
Well, I'm going to support this one. I think a case was being made in terms of we are using vote by mail, and it does seem like an imposition if we're charging people 50 cents, although they do have the option of going and dropping it there. But particularly, I would think, and I'm sort of surprised that my colleagues object to this, is that it's be more of an issue in rural areas or with seniors, many of which have limited mobility, and it's harder for them to get out to do this. It seems like this bill is designed to help those people out more than it is young people.
Madam Chair, since we're going to debate it a little bit, I just point out most of the seniors in my district would prefer to go back to the Buell Grange and vote there. So they don't like vote by mail. So,
okay, further discussion. I want to just comment in support of the other provisions of this bill that the bill is similar, although not identical, to a bill that the Senate actually passed back in the 2014 session, which deals with involvement on our campuses in the elections process. And so I wanted to thank Senator Devlin and the others who worked hard on this bill, because I think we passed that bill overwhelmingly at the time, but this seems to be a perfected version of the bill that it sounds like the campuses are in support of. And so I appreciate the work that went into that. And as to the postage issue, this has been kicking around for a long time. I think it's probably I don't know how well kept secret that already when people don't put stamps on their ballots, their ballot is still being counted. And so we just haven't really caught up with the practice that is the case, and we haven't dealt with that. So we can do that by sending this to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, point
yes,
of clarification.
Senator Farioli?
So, Madam Chair, are you asserting that the Postal Service actually delivered a ballot that didn't have postage?
I am asserting that absolutely.
I think we could dispense with the referral to Ways and Means.
Well, I think that we have our good Senate co-chair shaking his head.
There's a savings.
I'm sure that will come up in the discussion if and when the bill gets scheduled in the Budget Committee. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm glad you have such a good postmasters. Mine are not so forthright with the government's money. So.
Okay, so I think we need to call the roll. Seeing no further discussion, Eamon, would you please call the roll on the motion?
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Boquist?
No, thank you.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. And the motion carries, and the bill will move to Ways and Means. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1586. And let's start back at the beginning, and I'll open a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 207. And Erin, could you please tell us about this?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, SCR 207 honors the Portland Timbers for the 2015 MLS Cup victory.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like we have two people signed up to testify on this, and I'll call them both, Kathy Jennings and Britt McLean, if you'd both like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you.
And whoever wants to go first, please go ahead.
For the record, I'm Kathy Jennings, Vice President of Finance and Administration for the Portland Timbers. I apologize. I kind of got short notice that I was coming today to speak about this. But as you know, we are the 2015 MLS Cup champions. I'm quite proud of the team and the city for all of the attention that we have received. We've become kind of the shining stars of Major League Soccer, which has been amazing for our city. We've actually grown to 3 professional soccer teams in the city right now. And I believe this championship will help to continue to grow that here.
Great. Well, thank you for being here. And please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Britt McLean, Legislative Assistant to Representative Jennifer Williamson, House District 36 in downtown and southwest Portland. I'm here today on behalf of Representative Williamson to express strong support for SCR 207, honoring the Portland Timbers for their 2015 MLS Cup victory. Just 5 years ago, soccer wasn't on the average Portlander's radar. But today, that's a completely different story because of the Timbers. The Timbers have sold out every match that they've played since joining the MLS in 2011. That's 85 straight games and 21,000 tickets sold per game. Including playoffs, that's 90 total sold-out matches. There are currently 12,000 fans on the season ticket wait list. When Portland hosted the MLS All-Star Game in 2014, fans from 40 states and 12 countries purchased tickets for the match. More than 20,000 fans ride TriMet to Providence Park and celebrate afterward at surrounding restaurants and businesses. Forbes just announced that the Portland Timbers are the 3rd most valuable MLS team out of 20 teams. The numbers prove that the Timbers don't just thrill and entertain us, but that the team is a true economic boon for the city of Portland and a source of pride for Oregon. I know Representative Williamson wanted to be here to speak to you herself. And I know because of that, she strongly believes that this resolution deserves your aye vote, and I'm very grateful for your time today.
Thank you both for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Senator Burdick.
So I just want to know, I'm a chief sponsor on this bill, but I never got one of those green scarves. I'm lodging an official protest.
Okay, let's not get out of hand. Every other country riots on these soccer games. We don't want any riots here, madam.
Okay, well, thank you again for your testimony. And we don't have anybody else signed up to testify, so I will close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR 207. And Vice Chair Ferrioli, did you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move SCR 207 to the floor with the be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved SCR 207 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any objection to any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, motion carries. And Senator Burdick, assuming that you can get properly attired between now and when this goes to the floor, would you be willing to carry this?
At a minimum, I'm sure I can borrow one.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'd be happy to.
So Senator Burdick will carry, and I'll close the work session on SCR 207. And next, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1528. And Erin, could you tell us about this?
Sorry, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1528 requires members of Commission on Indian Services who are not members of Legislative Assembly to be appointed from nominees selected by tribal councils. It provides that majority of members of Commission who are not members of the Legislative Assembly does not constitute a quorum during certain gatherings. You have a -2 amendment, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It requires tribal members of the commission to be appointed from selection nominated by tribal governing body of the member in accordance with procedures of the tribe. You have a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact on the -2 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And we have one person signed up, Karen Quigley. And if you'd like to come forward, or if both of you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Quigley, and I have served as the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services for over 20 years, which is 50% of the commission's lifespan so far. With me, I have the recently reelected Chair of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz, And the current chairman of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. I do have some very brief testimony, written testimony. Thank you, Raymond. And even shorter comments about what the bill does and what it doesn't do. And just touching on a couple of things that the committee administrator might have mentioned, and with a little background, and then with your permission, I'm sure Chair Pigsley would love to add a little colorful comment to this discussion. Senate Bill 1528 essentially looks at a couple of things that have never been addressed in the 40 years that the commission's been operational, and just sort of makes it a better governing document. It explicitly adds a goal that is probably the key to the effectiveness of the commission, and that is that the purpose is to promote communication and state-tribal relations. For the past 20 years, since an executive order and since the legislature codified that executive order in 2001, the main focus of commission work has been on government-to-government relations. So this new purpose will just make that very clear in statute, in addition to its long-term purpose, original purpose, of improving services to Indians in the state of Oregon. There's a little word added in this Senate Bill 1528 to clarify that among all the types of governments that commission business does not interfere with, it includes intertribal business, that those governmental entities may have negotiations or things going on that the commission does not interfere with in the same way that it does not interfere with state or local government or federal negotiations that may be going on between an individual tribe and that entity. The third thing Senate Bill 1528 does is it respects the each sovereign's prerogative to have their selection serve on the commission representing their tribal government. This has been the practice for 40 years, and it just, this new language actually puts back into statute something that was existing in terms of tribal governments nominating their own representatives on the commission. Probably most importantly is the fourth point, which is that this Senate Bill 1528 acknowledges that these tribal leaders who serve on the commission are all the time, 24/7, elected officials of their own tribal governments, including times that they may be together outside of commission meetings. So what the bill doesn't do is it doesn't change a thing for the four members, including your esteemed vice chair, who serve on the commission. Their duties and responsibilities do not change at all under Senate Bill 1528. And LCIS meetings remain open to the public. They've always been open for 40 years, and including the meeting this Thursday, remain open to the public. The bill is addressing events, ceremonies, meetings, or conferences that the tribal leaders on the commission may be attending or participating in. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. And please go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Dolores Pigsley, and I'm the tribal chairman for the Confederated Tribes of Siletz and also for the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. It wasn't until our last commission meeting that we were reminded that we were a committee like any other committee and come under certain rules. And we were all looking at each other like, we do gather in crowds, usually the same people for Oregon tribes meetings, affiliated tribes of the Northwest, and the National Congress of American Indians. So it was kind of a surprise that we were told you when there's more than three of you in a room, one of you has to leave. Well, normally all nine tribes are in the room, so the representatives see each other often, and not just at meetings but other events like powwows and gatherings and funerals. And so we're very much in favor of this legislation, and we appreciate the time that it took to bring it forward. It happened very quickly, and like I said, it was our last commission meeting that the discussion occurred with the tribal leaders. And so we appreciate the work that you've done, Senator Farioli, on this, and we would like to see the legislation passed. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for your testimony, and thank you both for being here, and congratulations, Karen, on 20 years of great service, too. Any questions for these good folks?
No, Madam Chair, just a brief statement,
Senator,
if I
Farioli.
May, and this is at my own peril, because almost always the commentary from tribal leaders needs no appendage from anybody. But it was quite interesting to see the reaction when tribal members who are their tribe's designees on the Legislative Council on Indian Services heard the opinion that they might be elected public officials of the state of Oregon, that they might be subject to the verified statement of economic interest, and that they certainly were subject to the issues of quorum and open meetings laws whenever several of members were together, which is always. They just are very collaborative in their deliberations. So what we've done with this piece of legislation is to clarify that, in fact, we will have open meetings, we'll have postings, we'll have all of the usual and customary requirements of the Legislative Council on Indian Services when they are meeting as the Legislative Council on Indian Services. And at all other times, they are not subject to the same requirements that the legislative members are. That is to say, designated elected public officials subject to the open meetings and sunshine laws and a disclosure with this statement, verified statement of economic interest. This is critically important because what it does is it recognizes tribal sovereignty and makes a distinction between the services rendered by the tribes to the state by their membership in Legislative Commission on Indian Services and other officials that may be elected or appointed. So, we're happy to help. I appreciate the thanks of the tribes, but the fact of the matter is that many members have helped to bring this understanding about, all the sponsors of the bill but others, and we had several iterations of the amendment that you'll see until we knew that we had the language that reflects the tribal's interest as accurately as possible. Thank you, Madam.
Great. Well, thank you for those clarifications, Senator Farioli. Anybody else? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious. Was it the Department of Justice, the AG, who jumped up and said, okay, we've been doing this wrong for 40 years? I'm just curious who did this.
Madam Chair, it was closer to home than the AG's office. It was someone in the legislative branch opined in that direction.
For us, we looked in the mirror, huh? Mm. Got it. Thanks.
It was a surprise.
Surprise to me, too, right? But that's okay.
Madam Chair,
yes,
members of the committee, may I speak to the Dash 2 amendments, or do you feel
yes.
that that's been covered?
Yes, please.
Would
do.
That be okay? And that is, again, just recognizing tribal sovereignty and how each tribe may have different procedures on how it makes its appointments, and that some tribes' governing bodies are, in fact, called tribal councils. Some may be called board of trustees. Another tribal government was an executive committee for a number of years. So the statute just is addressing all the variations that may occur within the nine federally recognized tribal governments in Oregon. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for that explanation. And I don't see any more questions for you, so thank you both for your testimony. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1528. And do we have all the paperwork, Erin, on this?
We do, Madam Chair, for the dash twos.
Okay. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1528. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1528.
And thank you. Vice Chair Farioli moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1528. Any discussion? Any objection to the amendment? Okay. Amendment is adopted. And Vice Chair Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1528 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 1528 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And Senator Farioli, would you agree to be our carrier on the floor?
Madam Chair, I will. And I will reserve the opportunity to invite a co-carrier of Senator Roblin, who also serves on the LCIS.
Great.
The Legislative Commission on Indian
Great.
Services.
Okay, we will have our co-carriers as Senators Farioli and Roblin then. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1528. And we have two resolutions remaining, and so I'll open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 204.
Anybody signed up?
And we have nobody signed up to testify on this, so Erin, could you just briefly describe it?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 204 recognizes and honors Deputy Robert Talbert for his service to Oregon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this measure does come from Representative Olson, who has been working to make sure we appropriately honor all law enforcement fallen officers. This is part of his continuing effort to do that. He could not be with us this afternoon, but he does commend this to you on his behalf.
Okay. Well, thank you, Erin, for that explanation. We don't have anybody signed up. I'm sure we'll have somebody with us on the floor. So I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 204. And Senator Farioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I have a motion. I would move the adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 204. I move that HCR 204 be sent to the floor with a be adopted recommendation in honor of Deputy Robert L. Bob Talbert, who perished in 1984 as a result of an accident that occurred while he was responding to a burglary call in his jurisdiction, which was in Washington County. Madam Chair, that is my motion.
Okay, thank you. Senator Farioli has moved HCR 204 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries, and we will ask Senator Riley to carry this on the floor as it comes from his district. And I'll close the work session on HCR 204 and open a public hearing on HCR 206. And we also don't have anybody signed up on this one, but Erin, could you just briefly tell us what this is?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 206 recognizes and honors Deputy William Bowman for his service to Oregon. He, too, is a fallen law enforcement officer who, unfortunately, was killed in an accident during training at Camp Rialia in Oregon Coast Range. This, too, comes from you, from Representative Olson, and I, on his behalf, commend this to you for your recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Erin. And so we don't have any witnesses, so I'll close the public hearing. Open a work session on HCR 206. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move HCR 206 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved HCR 206 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion?
Madam Chair, the incident that occurred that took this valiant deputy's life, Deputy Bowman, while serving with the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, occurred during a special weapons and tactics training, as you mentioned, or as was mentioned at Camp Rialia. As a result of the incident, the training and technology and techniques of the Special Weapons and Tactics Team was changed in recognition of the potential danger of which those trainings are always inherently dangerous, but this incident was particularly sad as the officer was struck in the head by a live round that was inadvertently loaded into a training weapon. So, Madam Chair, this is a singularly sad, as all the fallen officer resolutions are, but as a result of the incident, improvements have been made to the whole safety and training package that officers that are engaged in special weapons and tactic training undergo.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And do we have a carrier for this?
Or? Clackamas County?
Clackamas County.
It is Clackamas County. I believe Representative Riley Senator Riley was going to carry them both.
Oh, both of them.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll ask Senator Riley to carry this one as well. And I'll close the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 206 and members that and 206 and members that and on House Concurrent Resolution.